and welcome to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. It is I, your host for this week, Becky Friedman, and with me in the studio is Mike.
Hey.
We always love having you on. I know that you're not here as often as maybe in days past of Ask an Atheist.
No, it's been a while.
And Nathan, how are you?
Hey, good.
So, you know, sometimes Ask an Atheist through the various social media outlets gets ratings, you know, where people will give a certain number of stars or smiley faces or thumbs up and things like that. I think it's kind of fun, both when we get, you know, nice feedback, you know, on Facebook, where you can find us at facebook.com/AskAnAtheistWA, or, you know, maybe on Twitter at AskAnAtheistWA, or just in different places. I don't think we've actually gotten a Yelp review ever, but it's kind of nice when we get those positive reviews and nice feedback. What's really fun is when we get the, you know, you mouth breathers are going to hell because you don't believe in XYZ God and version of God. That
usually from people that haven't actually listened to the show.
Yeah.
They saw the title.
Yeah, those are the real fun ones. But have you ever thought about rating other people's deities?
I actually seen these books before.
Oh.
They almost always are from one religion's point of view. It's like, you know, I think I saw a book at a bookstore that was like that. And it turns out they don't like other people's deities.
So you have books that are published from one particular religious point of view that's sort of
they're
reviewing,
like,
others' deities.
It's like a really biased version of a comparative religion class, which basically says they're all liars and fools and damned.
And there's also the some of the more famous this famous cartoon that was about sort of the Mormon religion, and it's this kind of an external view of it a little bit, and so they talk about how crazy it is. And then of course the most famous, maybe of any of these, which would be Chick Tracks, or...
Yes,
yeah.
There's a lot of bad ratings. It turns out people don't like other people's religions very much.
If you believe fiercely in your own, then you might believe that the other ones to be false. Perhaps the books themselves may say something about that. Well, guys, the internet has come to save us all this tedious task of reading the actual scriptures, because you can go to ratejesus.com and actually just, you know, with the click of a button, decide for your own self whether he warrants 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 stars, because a Protestant church in Tampa, Florida started a webpage called ratejesus.com in the hopes that internet respondents would give the deity 5 stars and leave positive comments. As of Sunday, September 2nd, Jesus has merited a 1.2 star rating, with many respondents leaving comments criticizing biblical doctrine and the Christian religion in general. Relevant Church, perhaps ironically named, which is the sponsor of Rate Jesus, states that the name and person of Jesus brings to mind many images, feelings, and thoughts, and had hoped that the site would spur conversation about all the complicated things that come up when thinking of Jesus. September 9th appears to be the date on which the church will discuss the results of the online poll and associated comments.
Yeah. This was just a bad idea at the DNA level. And there's a certain amount of, I guess you could say, cultural ignorance about how the internet works.
Did nobody watch when Stephen Colbert got one of the bridges in Czechoslovakia named after, or Czech Republic named after nachos or Doritos or something like that?
Yeah. I mean, you never let the internet name anything. You never let the
Bodie
internet...
Bodie McBoatface?
Yeah.
Jesus McJesusface.
You never put out there for something that you take very seriously and you want respectful, specific answers to. You never give an open question of saying, hey, what do you think about this thing that's really important to me, especially on a topic that's as thorny as religion?
Thorny? Really? You went there? Thorny?
Well, I'm not going for the pun, but I'm just saying this is these people are, they went to the internet, gave the internet the opportunity to give them feedback, and very specifically wanted this narrow answer to their questions. It's like, oh, they wanted to open up dialogue and talk about these complicated issues. But I don't know if they really did. I think they wanted a very specific answer. They wanted a 5-star rating for Jesus. They wanted everyone to talk about their personal feelings and maybe the story of how they came to Christ, or, you know, they want those kind of questions, or they want somebody who's like, you know, I haven't given this guy Jesus much thought, but you know, I've heard some. No, that's not how the internet operates.
Well, and I think too that they're in their own bubble of thought, and so within the echo chamber, they can't really think of, you know, other people thinking in different ways, and so it might not have even really occurred to them that there might be just this gross dissenting thought.
But you'd think that anyone that's on the internet for more than 10 minutes and sees any one of these, I guess you could say push polls, because political parties, networks do this too. They're like, how good of a job is, you know, Donald Trump doing as president on FoxNews.com? And it's not.
And the options are either excellent, awesome, sort of really cool, or meh. And there's no like negative feedback opportunities, right? At least there were some opportunities for negative feedback in this case.
Oh, I know. But sometimes they do that sort of stuff. They do have an opportunity for negative. And what it only takes is for one person on Facebook to go, oh, hey, check this out, folks. I voted a negative thing on their own website. And if there's anything the internet wants to do, it's to crash a poll. And this is what, I mean, 1.2, you only get 0.2 in the decimals if there's a lot of votes.
Now, I actually have maybe an alternate hypothesis here, and that is that Relevant Church in Tampa, Florida, is actually not as closed-minded or just ignorant of the way that the internet works. And my fear here, I mean, it's a somewhat of a fear of all the things that I could fear in the world, like, you know, nuclear war or pestilence or plague or, you know, wars over water rights and things like that. Basic humanity coming to an end. My fear here at this church is that they actually know that a bunch of atheists or people that are not fond of the Christian religion or Jesus in general are going to flood the poll. They're going to flood the poll. They're going to Yelp him out of, you know, his ratings. And next week, when this church comes back and starts discussing, look, the greater public thinks so poorly of our God Jesus, it is now our job.
Oh, they're persecuted.
To spread the, it is now our job to spread the word.
Well, yeah, you get both the, yeah, we have to spread it. We're persecuted. Look, we're right about how awful these heathens are in the world around
exactly.
us.
Exactly. I think that there's two ways that this could play out. One is, oops, we really didn't know that this was going to be happening. We're going to scrap next week's sermon. The other is, as you said, though, we're persecuted and they don't know how awesome Jesus is. Here's the thing. Many, many, many people who do not follow the Christian religion or religions in general, many people who are atheists or just meh, apatheists, are well acquainted with the writings and stories and doctrines of many religions, not least of all Christianity, because it is the dominant religion within the United States. And so I really hope that at this time, you know, the results of this particular downvoting of this deity will not be used to further entrench this feeling that seems to be prevalent amongst many evangelicals that being an evangelical believer in the Christian faith and in Jesus is somehow getting you on the persecution side of general society. Certainly, we can say you are not permitted to use your religion to discriminate against others, or use your religion to enact laws that affect the rest of us, or use your religion to just be awful to other people. But that does not mean that your right to believe has been curtailed in any way whatsoever. It's the right to act horribly upon that belief that we are actively trying to curtail, because you know what? I don't have any quarrel with people that want to be, you know, religious in their own particular way. I think that they're wrong, obviously. But hey, a Hindu believes that a Jew believes that a Christian is wrong and, you know, mistaken at the best in their particular beliefs.
Well, I think it's kind of a big sloshy mess, really, what it is that you have these people, many of whom, who don't see religious belief as just a thing that I proclaim, the thing that I believe, and restrictions I put upon myself, they push it outward. So when you want to, say, not adhere to anti-discrimination law, when you want to treat somebody in a vulnerable community terribly, if not yelling and screaming stuff at them, they think that shouldn't be used as a basis for disliking them in any fair way, because they're doing it from a motivation that's religious. And I'd say to that, it doesn't matter why you're being horrible to that person. You're not being persecuted if when you treat somebody badly, they respond by not liking you.
Or liking the doctrine that you seem to be using as your motivation for this horrible treatment.
Yeah, and not being liked is not persecution. It's just a consequence of being mean to people. And if somebody doesn't want anything to do with you, or they roll their eyes when you start talking about this stuff in ways that are hurtful or discriminatory or dismissive, I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. I don't have to like you no matter what you say, because what you're saying is religious. They seem to think that because it's coming from a place of religious belief, that it's inherently good. And I guess this gets into what I think is one of the more ugly, pernicious parts of Christian belief from a lot of sects, which is that we're going to base this on belief, not works. That determines what is good. Your works are what people judge you are. It doesn't matter what you believe. If you were a bully to me or to other people, I don't like you. And I'm not persecuting you. I'm not going after you or harassing you because I don't like you for the way you treat people.
So let's dig into that a little bit. If you are a believer and you believe that your God, the thing that is most important to him or to her or to it is that you have faith in him or faith in the miracles or whatever. What kind of a God is this when the most important thing is not how you treat one another, or is not how you treat the earth around you, or those that are less capable or more vulnerable than you? I mean, to me, that would seem strange of why I would be drawn to something that would require faith, but not the actions behind it. I would question the goodness of that kind of deity if that was the most important thing on his list of how to be a good religionist.
I think it's the idea that we treat certain things as if they're self-evident, that if you say that God is good, everything that God says is good, then some of those things that God is saying are violent or they're discriminatory or they're awful. Well, they're like, well, I'm sorry, I don't have to understand this, is the usual argument that they'll make. That's where the faith element comes in, that I'm just going to push ahead knowing that there's some kind of reward or punishment for me not pushing ahead. And they'll use arguments like belief isn't supposed to be easy, and that I have to overcome these sort of earthly emotional reactions to things.
Or there's a larger picture. I'm just a limited being and God is this other larger thing and I can't even understand it. So.
And who am I to judge God's moral precepts?
Well, and here's the thing. When keeping your faith is not easy to you because you don't know why you're being asked to hurt someone, ding, 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 ding. Those are your own moral alarm bells going off saying, I shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah.
It turns out that faith is a really unreliable method of determining goodness or truth or morality, because you can do whatever you want on the basis of faith.
Well, it's also the way that somebody expects to be treated. And I think that there's an unreasonable standard that a lot of religion folks are using as far as what they consider persecution. That persecution is, I'm not allowed to believe as I want. I'm being actively harassed. Maybe even my place of worship is being, covered in graffiti or hateful slurs.
Or I'm being fired from my job or not hired in the first place. I'm being discriminated in housing applications.
I'm being spat on. These are all the things you use, but simply not being liked, where somebody doesn't want you there or they don't treat you as if you're a moral authority, that's not persecution. And I think that the attitudes I see over and over, and this is actually something you see in the president quite a bit too, which is that there's this attitude of, I deserve this percentage of positive reaction to what I do and what I say, regardless of what I do and what I say. That if it's overwhelmingly negative, then I'm being treated unfairly. Then it has nothing to do with what I'm doing. It's not as if I could do something that's so bad that everyone could dislike me. It's like, wait, wait, wait. I deserve at least 50% positive reinforcement regardless of what I do. And if I don't get at least 50%, I'm being treated unfairly and I'm being persecuted.
Well, Donald Trump thinks, as you have described, that in fact, 80% of the press is the enemy of the people. And of course, we all know that when Trump says the people think this, or nobody knew how complicated healthcare could be. He deems himself to be the people or nobody or everybody, right? If it doesn't apply to him, it doesn't apply to humanity. If it does apply to him, then that's just, you know, humanity. And he said in a White House interview with Ainsley Earnhardt of Fox and Friends about 2 weeks ago, he claimed that only 20% of the press reports when he does something well and characterized the remaining media as fake news. He even called the New York Times crazed lunatics who cannot write a good story about him. Well, maybe they can't write a good story about him because he hasn't done something good.
But the question of what is he doing well? Well, tell me what you think you're doing well. I can't find it. I really can't. And that's what I find so baffling about this is, again, it gets from this attitude of I should be treated positively by at least half of the people all of the time. And it turns out that that 20% that he's talking about are generally going to be overtly partisan news sources. If not, a lot of them are conspiracy sites that, you know, a lot of these that aren't considered, they're just mainstream news sources. They aren't considered to have an overt partisan left or right pull are negative about him. And he's going to find that everywhere. And it's not like this isn't reflected in his poll numbers or every time where people are asked questions about, do you find the president, are you proud of him? Or are you embarrassed by him? What's his approval rating? Do you think he's telling the truth about this?
How many stars do you think he earns? Is he above 1.2?
He might be around 1.2. I don't know. I mean, Trump actually exists, so he has the potential.
Are you saying that there's some question in our minds about whether Jesus existed either as a deity or as a person in the first place?
Possibly.
I think definitely not as a deity, but I find that I care less and less about the other question as we go on. I don't think there's a lot of good reason to, but it's like the same thing with a lot of the people mentioned in like Julius Caesar's war diaries. This one mention in this one page is the only thing that proves that this person ever existed.
It's always so what?
Yeah.
Like, what we can name him, you know, Jesus McJesus Face or Kitty Cat Meow Meows. It doesn't really change anything about.
It's the same. Did Socrates exist? Is he just a character that Plato uses as a teaching tool? Or was he an actual teacher that he had? And I think ultimately with Socrates, it doesn't really matter. I think with Jesus, it does because the Jesus story is so.
Well, it's a greater
based
claim.
On whether he's real. Yeah,
there's a greater claim that's a deity. It's not like if Socrates were not a real teacher and somehow a fictional teacher, there's nothing that changes. There's no magic that happens just because he was a real person or not, because he's dead right now either way, turns out. So,
yeah, if all there is the stuff that Plato wrote about him, that stuff is relevant or irrelevant based on its own merits.
Well, if you've got an opinion about Socrates, Plato, Jesus, or Trump, do call us at 844-SKEPTIC. That's our voicemail line. Or tweet us at AskAnAtheistWA or find us on Facebook. We'll be back after the break.
Wait, we're live?
This is a warning made by the team Hot People.
Squid Ink. It is a lie. For example, the last day.
Hey, kid, wanna buy some squid ink?
Sure.
They never saw that kid again.
Notice, do not listen to squid ink salesmen.
Ever.
Hello, and welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Today, I, Becky Friedman, have Mike and Nathan in the studio with me. And, well, we were talking a little bit about persecution or perceived persecution during our last segment. And I want to go to some place where, you know, people who maybe are not of the dominant religion are in fact actually persecuted or have been. The group Atheists in Kenya is petitioning their country's government to declare February 17th a national holiday acknowledging and celebrating atheists. AIK leaders contend that Kenyans who do not believe in God or gods deserve a public holiday, especially since Eid al-Adha was declared a public holiday this August 21st in Kenya. They wish to mark the anniversary of their group's founding by holding parades in various counties to promote awareness of atheism and freedom of religion as a constitutionally guaranteed human right. AIK's incorporation initially was suspended when both Muslim and Christian clergy objected to atheists registering as an official society, but the Kenyan High Court overturned those actions, legitimizing atheists in Kenya. The group estimates that around 5% of the Kenyan population is atheist.
Well, at least, you know, the other major religions there were able to unify together and come to a common cause.
It turns out that persecution is a very unifying thing, especially if you can find a new out-group. You can overcome a lot to hate somebody that's even more different.
So once we get beyond the strange bedfellows of Muslims and Christians in a particular country getting together, you know, this is kind of an easy thing for either of those religions to sort of object to, saying, how do they get to be a sort of religious or pseudo religious society? You know, they're taking away people from our ranks. They're sucking in apostates and things like that. You know, once you kind of get over that, blah, da, da, parades, would you guys feel comfortable having an atheist holiday where we've got atheist parades? Like, cause sort of like a pride parade, I guess.
I mean, in a place like Kenya, I think that it'll be really important as far as how they get the message out. And, you know, it's a legitimizing type of activity.
I don't know about holidays and stuff like that. I the idea of a parade makes more sense if you're talking about it framed in the way that, say, gay rights and gay pride was, where that pride comes from a response to a society telling you that you're garbage and you saying, no, I am not garbage. I am going to be this thing openly and proudly, and I do not care what you think. And it's definitely a situation where that could be potentially dangerous, as it was at the early stages of the gay rights movement.
Do you think it's also not just to celebrate, you know, resistance and flourishing in the face of persecution, but also effective in terms of upping awareness of what atheism is, if you were to have a parade?
Well, I think the awareness is going to be a big deal. You know, besides the, hey, atheists are bad people and they're horrible, the other side of, or the other type of persecution, or the other side of you know, the discrimination that goes against is, well, atheists don't really exist. You believe in God anyway, and there aren't really, you know, the stories that you hear even in the U.S. today are, I didn't know that there was other people like myself mm-hmm. in this area that's predominantly religious.
You know, we've had a few folks on the show over the years that have said, in their own circumstances, either socially, you know, or at dinner parties or in the workplace, somewhere at the water cooler, someone's like, well, I've never met an atheist, not knowing that the person standing right next to them happens to be. And then when you get that response, oh, but you're so nice. Like, you're one of the good ones.
Oh, that's a dirty phrase.
Have you ever gotten one of those where someone's surprised to learn of your particular belief?
I have one that's a Facebook friend of mine that he's a very devout Christian, and you know, he's convinced that I'm a good person. He knows me. He's known me for a long time. Like, we went to high school together, but it's hard for him to wrap his head around the fact that I might be like a blasphemer or whatever. I was actually trying to convince him that I'm a blasphemer, so I'm ultimately not savable. But it's really hard. It's they know that they're good, and or that, you know, that there can be other good people that aren't of their religion, and it's a lot of mental gymnastics that go along with that.
Yeah, that's something uncomfortable about watching somebody clearly internally vetoing their own moral impulses. Like, they're like, but that's,
are they moral impulses, or are they what's been indoctrinated?
Well, I think it's a war between those things, that you have an emotional reaction to seeing things. Like, you're like, oh my God, that is horrible. Because if I see somebody being beaten horribly outside, it's not an intellectual thing that happens in my head. It's an emotional response of, oh my God, that's horrible. I see sympathy. I am able to see myself in that person's shoes. And I think they might have that reaction because if I've had that scenario where somebody does know me and they've known me for a long time, I don't in workplace and other scenarios bring up my atheism very often. So when it suddenly does become relevant, it usually comes in the context of me having known this person for a long time. And I've had it where I don't want to continue any kind of debate with this person. I don't want to argue about the merits of this or that religious belief system. It's just like, hey, you know, I'm one of those people, and that's about the length of the conversation I want. And I can feel them noticeably cool to me, that their perception of me changes, and it colors every interaction I generally have with them afterwards, that they're generally a lot more guarded with me, like as if there's something that happens. And I'm not saying this is every religious person, but I've had this happen enough times that it almost feels like it's not worth bringing up. And usually at work, it's not an appropriate thing anyways. And that's the only time where I would have a sort of relationship where that wouldn't come up.
Now, is the flip true? Is if you are in, and I'm kind of putting us all on the spot a little bit here to be a little bit, you know, honest and open-hearted about this.
Sure.
You know, if you're there and you're socializing with someone every day, you know, either someone that's, you know, in your kids, you know, daycare circle or at your work, or, you know, someone that's somewhere within your acquaintance, your general circle of acquaintance, and then you find that they are an evangelical Christian, for instance, maybe through a well, I'm really sorry to hear that you're going through such a hard time. I'll include you on my Sunday's prayer list. Do you then noticeably cool to that person? Does that affect your former relationship with that person?
Not if that's all they said.
I mean, I don't mind arguing with other people. I do try to make it as civil as possible. The person I mentioned earlier, we've battled it out on Facebook for quite a long time, and I'm definitely of the belief that he is a good person, despite the fact that his religion kind of gets in the way. And I think that's another part of that little internal conflict that goes on. I did just recently at work, the guy in front of me was shipping out some packages, and it was a Zoroastrian.com. So I asked him about it. I'm like, hey, did I actually read that right? Because I only got a glimpse of the label. He's like, yeah, there's actually more of us over here than I thought. And I'm like, well, that's really cool. And
that is a really interesting one, because you can't, as far as I know, convert into the Zoroastrian religious culture. That is something that is very ancient and is sort of somewhat selective.
Right. Well, and the bulk of the Mazda Yanasa in the world are in a very geographically, I mean, they're all in kind of the Kurdish controlled areas of the world, and that's the bulk of them. There's a few kind of in the East Coast, but there may not even be thousands in the U.S. There only might be a couple thousand or something.
Yeah, I think my reaction to that would be kind of like meeting a druid, where I'm like, oh, I didn't know you guys were still around.
Yeah, and he was...
It's like when you see a payphone.
I'm like, he, of course, they're very nice. And so,
oh, yeah.
And he was more than happy to share who he was. And, you know, I got his email address if I have any questions about it or want to talk to him. And he was excited. Oh, I'm an atheist guy. I've been on the radio before. Okay, cool. That's everything's...
But again, most people are fairly nice. I think it's the parts, the places where I do cool on it is not that they're a Christian or not that they're an evangelical, but it's specific beliefs. Yeah. If a thing comes out of their mouth and they're conspiracy-minded or they're bigoted... I would definitely cool on someone if I found out they were a white supremacist, where I'm like, okay, you have beliefs that are dehumanizing and discriminatory, and, you know, screw you. I don't want anything to do with you. I don't want you in my life. I don't want to talk to you. You're a bad person. And just being a Christian doesn't make you a bad person, but being like a homophobic activist does make you a bad person.
I think that's where it came down to for me personally. I had been, you know, meeting with someone daily and saying hi to someone that I had worked with. And then, you know, when she found out that I had something that was particularly challenging, she said, I'll include you on my Sunday prayer list. That tells me that in her way, in her community's way, she's thinking about me and rooting for me, right?
Yeah.
It's not something that applies to me. Whether I'm on the prayer list or not, I don't think a God is going to help me with whatever's challenging. But I do know that I've got someone else in my corner.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that doesn't make me cool on you whatsoever.
No.
But when someone says, well, I'm just so glad that our school or our workplace doesn't have these fancy transgender bathrooms, then that's a time when I say, where maybe I'm not going to be so open with you. Maybe I'm not going to invite you to my, after school happy hour gatherings, you know, something like that. And I think you really hit the nail on the head, Mike, when you said that, you know, most people are nice enough, and you know, a thing that we've said on the show for a long time is people are better than their books. That little moral alarm bell that you know, clergy have said, oh, that's just God testing you, or that's the proof that faith is difficult. No, that is you being better than your book, you being better than the doctrine that's espoused by your leaders. And there's many religions that then take that little internal human alarm bell and change what their doctrine is. And that's how we get, like, oh, I don't know, egalitarian leadership within particular sects of you know, religious practice. Or that's how we get, you know, we get congregations that are open and welcoming to all sorts of family structures. But again, that's human change propelling forward the doctrine of what is supposedly coming from your God.
Well, and you still have throughout every single Christian sect, I think this is pretty universal, but that, and, you know, people have a really hard time with this one, is that people have to believe that they're somehow not worthy or not a righteous person because there is this God that's righteous, and that, and it's a very self-dehumanizing thing. And I think that that's part of that poison. And that's one of the big things that it's a big conflict in their head.
Well, on to what is something that is excellently humanizing. The first legally sanctioned humanist weddings took place at the end of August after a Belfast appeals court ruled in June that such marriages must be legally recognized. Emma Taylor and Paul Malone became the first couple to be wed in a humanist ceremony on August 25th. A celebrity couple who had spearheaded the effort to get humanist marriage ceremonies recognized in Northern Ireland were actually able to marry in 2017 after a high court ruling, but the others needed to wait for the appeals court ruling to approve the concept that applied to others besides model Laura Lacole and Leeds United footballer Eunan O'Kane. While humanist weddings are the second most popular type of ceremony in Scotland, England and Wales have not yet given legal recognition to the non-religious ceremonies.
I said this a little earlier, and this is, I guess this is a hot take, but I really do think this is true. I think we have the kid touchers to thank for this.
Well, you got to back that up a little bit, yeah, and explain it, please.
Okay, so
because I don't like sort of these joyous humanist celebratory moments linked with any kind of abuse of children.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to help me out.
Okay, so the Catholic Church in Ireland was politically and socially an incredibly powerful behemoth for very long, and generally speaking, they would almost have veto power over any kind of social legislation like this. And it turns out that because of the fact there was a pernicious, widespread, systematic just cover up, and just the way that children were treated in the Catholic Church, sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, they have burnt out their moral authority in Ireland, that at one point in the past, they would have been able to shoot this down. But they have so destroyed their own moral framework that they don't have the ability to veto this stuff anymore. All they can do is stand back and wring their hands and look upset because they've had this massive conspiracy to protect child rapists in Ireland, and that it blew up in their faces. They don't have that political power anymore. That political oomph is gone. And now because of this, they're finding that a lot of things are moving fairly quickly in Ireland now.
I think that's a really good insight. I mean, we have both Ireland and Northern Ireland that have, like you said, moved quickly on these social issues.
I mean, the attendance to the Pope visit was minuscule. I mean, we thought Trump's inauguration numbers were bad. This is kind of...
but again, imagine if the Pope had gone there 30 years ago.
Well, we have pictures of, 79?
Yeah.
And it was
crazy. It's very different because there was a moral authority. There was a certain of unspoken authority given to the Catholic Church. Like, oh my God, the Pope says this. That's just the way it is. We're just going to have to listen to it. I mean, we don't have the same kind of situation where orphanages could openly abuse children, like slap children across the face, put them in cold rooms where they didn't have access to heat or health care, that they'd be subjected to awful forms of sexual abuse. That was, I mean, there was a scouring of all of that, that all of that came to light, and they were left there holding the bag going, you allowed this to happen. So now when one of those guys in the collar or of colorful robe, you know, clucks his tongue and crosses his arms about social change, people roll their eyes and go, I don't care what that guy has to say. He basically gave up and forfeited any right he has to tell me how to morally live my life.
And to back that up, I mean, Scotland has been allowing humanist weddings for, 2005, I think, was their first year. And now it's the second most popular type. There's a demand within their own culture. I'm a neighboring country, whatever, it's close enough. And I think we're seeing wherever this happens, there's such a rapid uptake to this, because that's what really people feel. People, you know, religion really isn't that important to most people when you really give them the option.
It looked like it provided the structure and the opportunity for that's how weddings happen. Mm-hmm. That's how funerals happen. They happen in churches. They get sanctified or solemnized by a clergy member. And when we start doubting our clergy, when we start, we take away all of that authority that was imbued in them. When the Pope came to Ireland, there was testimony from someone who had been abused in a Magdalene laundry. And it seemed to suggest that Pope Francis wasn't even aware that Magdalene laundries existed, those horrible places of torture where young pregnant girls and women, or just those that were deemed to be too rowdy by their parents, or those who were homeless or orphaned, where they went and were in indentured slaves, mother and baby homes. I mean, the Pope seemed to suggest having no knowledge of this whatsoever, where it was an institution that was so critical to, social structure of Ireland, Republic of Ireland, and Northern Ireland for such a long time. It does seem bizarre. I want to go now back to the United States, where the Catholic Church also seems to be losing some of its stranglehold on certain, societal functions. The Supreme Court last week rejected a Catholic foster agency's request for an injunction that would have compelled the city of Philadelphia to maintain links with the group that refuses to accept gay couples as foster parents. Litigation continues in lower courts over the city having suspended referrals to Catholic social services due to the agency refusing to follow the city's anti-discrimination ordinance. The agency had refused to even evaluate same-sex couples as potential foster families. CSS contends that placing foster children with otherwise qualified gay parents would amount to an endorsement of same-sex marriage and would violate their religious freedom. Justices Alito, Thomas, and Gorsuch said that they would have granted the agency's request, but 5 justices are needed in order for an injunction to be granted.
Well, I wonder how long it's going to take before we have these various religions and religious people within there that are trying to, like Mike mentioned earlier about, well, it's my religious right to go, beat up these gay people or go make fun of these people or refute, like, you're persecuting me by not allowing me to, like,
or even just getting upset at you doing that.
Well, yeah, but but to even just be blocked from doing discriminatory things. I think we're, as these behaviors become more and more outed, more widespread, more clearly, these are religious people. And this is what religion is doing. It takes whatever people that are there, and they're doing horrible things just in the name of religion. And then we're somehow protecting that using legal methods that, it takes the Church of Satan to, have that.
Satanic temple?
Satanic temple. Yeah. And then, of course, they get upset about that. But when they look at the laws, then,
well, it doesn't matter why you're violating a anti-discrimination law. It doesn't matter why. It doesn't make it somehow moral. It doesn't make it respectable because you're violating it for religious reasons. And I think that they want to be treated differently. And that's why I think it's so pernicious to try to give them some sort of an out and say, well, there's a loophole. You don't have to obey that law if you're discriminating against people for religious reasons, when that's the primary reason that law exists in the first place. It doesn't matter why you do it. You just don't do it. And if that's a problem for you, then maybe you shouldn't run an adoption service.
I think what this also highlights is how our social welfare system from state to state and federally relies so heavily on the institutions of religion. And as we quit being so religious as a society, do we leave these things like fostering children that are in need of being homed and housed and loved and cared for? Do we leave that to religious agencies, or can we have, government links with non-religious agencies, with nonprofits that are non-sectarian, that don't have a religious bent? I understand that a large part of proselytizing and a large part of people's callings who are religious is care for and welfare of the most vulnerable. But we also see that it has been used over time for horrible torture places like Magdalen laundries, for Indian boarding schools in our Western United States, where we had the, you know, the religious organizations that were there to Christianize the savages. And we can see now as a society that we don't necessarily need to have religious organizations that are involved in social welfare. When you look at something from a humanist, a secular humanist point of view, you say, why does it have to be religiously motivated? Why can't we do it because we are fellow humans? Whether that's advocating for more government agencies or advocating for the government to partner with non-religious nonprofits, I think both can be valid and both can be worked out. But we don't need to be relying on discriminatory institutions to house and care for our most vulnerable.
Well, I think there's a bit of a poison pill that you can't allow to be there, which is, if there's going to be any kind of a public-private partnership for dealing with social issues, whether it's something like a hospital or adoption services, then the government, as a part of that, can set standards. They can say, okay, we will work with you, even a church, but these are the standards that you must hit. And they're the same standards as a secular nonprofit. And that means you can say, okay, but you're not allowed to proselytize. You're not allowed to discriminate against the people that you give services to or the people that are able to make these adoptions. And you can't, well, I'm sorry, then maybe you're not somebody that we're going to allow to provide that service if that can't do it. If you're so motivated to help these children, but the breaking point for you is the proselytization, maybe the proselytization is why you're doing it. If, well, that's a thing, that, because we saw this happen, of course, in, was it Washington, D.C. or something a few years ago, where they just closed down their whole program for like soup kitchens because of an anti-discrimination law that they disagreed with. So that discrimination law was more important than those services that you say are your prime motivator. That happens over and over and over again. And maybe we just don't want to deal with those people.
Well, and it's like they're like a false flag, or it's their own smokescreen that they're putting up. Say, hey, look, we're doing all this important stuff, although we really just care about this government money that comes in, and, you know, but we got to control the narrative, and we have to control this stuff. And so, you know, they use that framework to demonize people that are coming after their discrimination that they're doing, because that's part of who they really are. But ultimately, it's like the money behind it.
So. Yeah, that they want to have their cake and eat it too. They want to get government money, but they don't want to have to meet the standards that they need to get that government money. So I really think, you know, I'm sorry, you're just going to get out of that business. We can find other people that can do this. The same thing with hospitals, that it's so important for them to not give patients all the information that they might need if it involves reproductive health.
That actually is a huge issue within Washington State, where you have more than a quarter of counties where your only hospital is a religiously affiliated hospital. And you have directives from people that aren't even medical providers telling Catholic hospitals. You have these bishops that have just decided what to say, what care providers and hospitals can say, not giving that information about reproductive health. Or in Washington State and in other states that have death with dignity laws, without giving full information about your end of life options. And that's a huge thing that affects Washington, that affects Oregon, and many states around the country as well. One thing I want to bring back to here is, you would have had to have 5 Supreme Court justices in order for an injunction to be granted. Here you only have 3, and it was Alito, Thomas, and Gorsuch. No Roberts.
Yeah, Roberts sometimes surprises people. I mean, I think he's mostly horrible, but I think we're dealing on a scale that involves, you know, Thomas and Gorsuch and stuff. So, you know, like I said, you're grading on a curve when it comes to the Supreme Court.
And of course, you're only looking at 8 votes right now, since we don't yet have a Supreme Court justice filling that 9th seat. So even if you had Roberts, you would have need to, you know,
you need to sway another person too. And you need a majority.
So, you know, we can say, hey, if the thing that is so important to you is fostering these children, why don't you just give up that little thing, which is the, the anti-discrimination thing. Why don't you just go along with the city's clause, the anti-discrimination clause? On the other side of this, though, you have people saying, hey, City of Philadelphia, if making sure that children are cared for is your prime motivator, why don't you just give up this little anti-discrimination clause and let the Catholic agency continue to not allow gay couples to be even screened?
Because then you're going to have kids that don't get adopted and are left in this system even longer. Because of the bigotry of a bunch of guys in like Harry Potter robes who are going to say, oh, well, I'm not going to let this perfectly loving family who would give this person a good life. I'm going to, no, this kid's going to be in the system forever, the limbo of the system, because it's more important for me to discriminate for than that kid to have a happy life.
This is Ask an Atheist at 844-SKEPTIC and at atheist.radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Hello, my name is Archie Toothis, and I am here to warn you of the dangers of squid ink. Fact! Did you know that 80% of squid ink users develop tentacles in the first 2 weeks of use? Fact! Squid ink oftenly results in stomach ulcers and explosive diarrhea. Fact! Squid ink users die 5 years before non-users. Please call 1-800-NOT-SQUID or visit www.imnotsquidding.com to view all of the dangers of squid ink.
Are you guys ready for some weather? I said, are you guys ready for some weather?
I don't know. I've seen what the weather's been. I'm afraid to ask.
There's been too much sun, so yes.
Well, if you were in Mexico, you might not be in for any kind of weather. Certainly not hailstorms. You know why, guys?
Why is that?
Well, automaker Volkswagen has vowed to suspend automatic operation of so-called hail cannons at its factory in Puebla, Mexico, after local farmers joined together to sue the company for nearly $4 million for causing drought, which led to massive agricultural losses. The anti-hail devices emit highly compressed blasts of gas into the sky, causing shock waves, which are thought to prevent or break apart hail that might damage car exteriors. Scientists have found no evidence to suggest that the sonic booms disperse ice chunks or prevent would-be rainstorms. But Volkswagen agreed to operate its anti-hail guns only in manual mode when weather forecasters determine that hail is likely.
Are you saying these are German-built weather machines?
These are German-built weather machines!
It's alternative universe chemtrails.
It's actually Volkswagen is not the maker of these hail cannons. These hail cannons have been around for like more than a decade. These anti-hail cannons is really what we should be saying. Someone somewhere got the idea to sell these things to farmers, right? So not just farmers that want rain for their crops, but farmers whose crops are damaged by hail. So you think of like orange groves or bell peppers or things like that. If you had big chunks of ice raining down on your fruits and vegetables, it would ruin them. So farmers are always wanting to, you know, like maybe not have their stuff damaged by hail. So
what do these cannons do to like birds and insects?
I don't know, but that would be a really good thing to research, actually, for, you know, maybe unscrupulous marketing people who want to sell bridges in Washington to people. I mean, seriously,
I'm going to create an anti-hail cannon device.
We'll have the sonic blast that the waves converge, whoa, whoa, right. Whoa, 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 and then it'll just like cancel it out.
Well, you just fire the sonic cannon at the other sonic cannon, and you can shake it apart.
So there's a few things here. First of all, yes, people that have been conspiracy theorists saying that there are weather machines are now have their conspiracies validated because there's companies that want to sell these weather machines to, you know, farmers that are having a hard time with stuff. And apparently car makers that don't want their cars all dented up, right?
Let's put the car indoors.
But then you also have this. This is as good as Sylvester McMonkey McBean with the, you know, Sneetch's star off again and star on again
machines.
Snake
oil, yeah.
Right, because there's no scientific evidence that any of these sonic blasts actually break apart hail.
Which is kind of interesting because I would think as a corporation, they would like to not spend money. I'm talking about Volkswagen. And if there was some really good reason that this doesn't really do anything, then maybe those dollars would rather be better suited in some CEO's pocket or something.
But Nathan, It's a sonic cannon. It's cool.
It is pretty cool. I do have to admit that.
So why wouldn't you want to put a bunch of sonic cannons on your roof?
I want at least three of them.
You might also think that if you're Volkswagen, you would want to do something honest for the environment, you know, like especially in light of, oh, I don't know, having faked your data to say that you weren't actually as polluting as you were.
Yeah.
Although maybe it's the same group that's making the decision. They just haven't quite gotten in the loop yet.
Yeah, we're dealing with mad scientists, clearly.
They've taken a few too many sonic booms to the head or something. I don't know. So the sonic boom that's created, the manufacturers of these devices say that it's only good, like, I don't know, somewhere between like 100 and 600 meters above and around. Which you
That's
wouldn't
not very far.
No, it's not.
Especially when you're shooting it at the sky.
Exactly, right? And so you'd think that, you know, you would need to have a rain cloud, you know, like in the little comics when someone's feeling really sad and there's like a rain cloud directly above them and no one else, right? So you'd need to have like the hail cloud right above the cannon and shoot the cannon straight up into that hail cloud and then have it actually not hail on you, but also have some kind of like Dorothy machine from the Twister movie that goes up into that hail cloud to know that it was actually a hail cloud as opposed
into the suck zone.
Right. So you have this, and then maybe farmers might, you know, have a case that the rain cloud was broken up and that they don't have any, you know, water for their crops.
So these things, we don't know if they actually work or not, and people are suing over a machine that might not work.
Yes.
I don't know the weather in Mexico very much. Do they really have a hail problem?
Actually, yeah. I mean, in desert areas or in that area of the world, you have hail. I mean, I live right on the border, and Puebla is far away, you know, countrywide speaking, from the place that I lived in New Mexico, which was right on the border. But certainly there's hailstorms that happen all along our southwest borders, and you know, you can have hail damage to your car. That's, you know,
so
like,
this is like Midwest hail, like the golf ball type hail.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah,
yeah, okay. Yeah. You can have a pockmarked car. You know, okay. Looks I like guess, it had a bad adolescence.
It puts a new spin on the Volkswagen Golf.
Oh, yeah. Because I was just wondering about that. Because I mean, we have hail here sometimes, and it's at best the size of like a Dippin' Dot.
No, this is no Dippin' Dot hail.
Okay, so I mean, it's just, it's kind of neat to watch the rain bounce sometimes, but if this is like damaging something, you do know that there is a thing called a covered raised parking garage that you can put these cars inside of. The airport has many of them.
They're really expensive though.
Well, so is all that hail damage. What do you think a sonic cannon costs?
I don't know. Concrete's expensive.
Concrete's expensive, but when you're that versus a science fiction death ray firing at the sky that is probably going to cover like 2% of it anyways.
Well, and also on the effectiveness, again, on the money side, if these things had any sort of validity, you would think that the insurance companies would be all over this.
Yeah.
Because that sounds like a really great way to make money on top of making money. I don't know. That's just me.
Here's a thing I'm just going to, you know, put out there. Thunder.
Yeah.
Thunder, kind of sonic and booming, you know? Like, you'd think that, like, most of the time when there's a hailstorm, there's also thunder. And if they went together, then you'd think that, you know, if sonic booms actually broke up ice chunks, maybe there wouldn't be hail when there's thunder. But, hey, whenever it's hailing, it's often thundering.
So if these things are on all the time, is it constantly sound like there's a thunderstorm above this factory?
I have no idea. But it's I think they weren't on all the time. It was just programmed to like go on automatically when some certain weather trigger was, you know, was tripped or something like that. But now they're only going to be operated manually.
Oh, like you're playing. What is the name of that game where the old arcade game where you're shooting the nuclear missiles as they come down?
Yeah, something like that. They just used to be on automatic all the time. But
Missile
now
Command.
Now you actually have to, you know, like move the joystick.
Okay, so they're going to fire. They're moving the sonic cannon at the bottom of the screen.
I have no idea.
And they're just
idea.
Aiming for the hail as it comes down.
Yeah.
And saving all of the cars.
You're safer if you shoot through the building.
Yet making all of the Mexican crops perish.
Oh, wow.
The other thing that really struck me here, they're suing for only $4 million. you know, there's apartment complexes that get raised and rebuilt for $4 million. Like, this is kind of a moderate crop loss. I think that maybe Volkswagen would just be better off being a good neighbor and saying, here, we're going to compensate you for this. And, oh, why don't we try and find a way to, like, you know, greenify the area? But no, we're going to invest in hail cannons. So from one conspiracy to another, a judge has denied conspiracy theorist Alex Jones's request to dismiss the defamation suit brought by the parents of a Sandy Hook massacre victim. Jones has been a purveyor of the conspiracy theory that the murder of 20 children and 6 school employees was a false flag operation, that mourning families were merely crisis actors, and that the whole event was designed to ease the government's supposed widespread confiscation of firearms from American citizens. Jones had also released the personal information of the parents of Noah Posner, forcing them to live in hiding after they received death threats. Leonard Posner and Veronique De La Rosa's case is just one of 5 defamation lawsuits that the InfoWars host is facing in Texas and Connecticut.
Yeah, he's accused people of being terrorists before and outed them, or they're a shooter and that. He's a scumbag, and this couldn't happen to a nicer person, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah,
and doxing is really not something you should be doing. How is that just not instant harassment?
I'm one of those weird people. I think the doxing of Nazis who are Nazis in public is separate. It's more of a question of not being allowed to have a secret identity, that you shouldn't be able to take off your mask and go back to being a guy who works at
Best Buy. For the record, there is no evidence that the parents of this poor child who died are Nazis.
I'm not saying that. I don't want to make a blanket thing about that. I'm saying there's a very specific use for throwing somebody's identity out there, and being the victim of a shooting is not one of those things. I want to say that very clearly, is that this is harassment that's being led against people who have just gone through the worst day of their life. It's like, okay, what, aside from like a shark attack, what is the worst thing that could happen? Is somebody shot your child and your child's friends, that even if they weren't a direct victim of the shooting, they are still a victim of a shooting, and they are going to spend years just digesting what happened to them at a young age and what they experienced and what their friends experienced. And now we're going to add to it that a bunch of, you know, jerks on the internet are going to call them liars and scream at them and send them hate mail and death threats.
I kind of wish that Alex Jones would just stick to, you know, weather conspiracies. I mean, if we had just fed him the whole hail cannon thing, maybe he wouldn't be going after the parents and children of,
you know. He still would.
He still would.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a terrible garbage person.
He's very miserable, obviously, just in general.
He's like, hey, it's a false flag, and these people, they're all crisis
actors.
Not
on our show, Mike, not on our show.
It's just like, you know what, this guy is getting what is coming to him, that he led a harassment campaign, and now he's feeling the consequences, and he's playing persecution just like everyone does.
Well, if you feel persecuted, you can email us at questions@atheist.radio or tweet us at AskAnAtheistWA or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/AskAnAtheistWA. You can leave us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC. It's been my pleasure to have Nathan and Mike in the studio today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hope for no hail this week.
I'll use my cannon.
Happy Labor Day. Go Unions.